It's not dead. It's just not. It doesn't work if it's not. And I didn't notice it this time. Boy, I can tell it's on now. Do I need to repeat any of that for anybody? Real quick, the chronology goes from Moses going up into the mountain. They make the covenant with God. They break the covenant by Moses is up in the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. They break the covenant. Moses comes back down and, of course, deals with the people there. And God deals with them as well. That's in chapter 32. And 32, 33, and we've been studying this, 34 is where God told Moses to cut two stones like the former ones. And God wrote on them, and I think we finished up that section. God repeats some of the laws there and some of the feast there in chapter 34. And then 35 actually picks back up where Moses actually speaks to the people concerning how they were going to actually go about making the tabernacle. What the book chooses to do is to blend the study of chapters 25 through 31 with 35 through 39. And that makes sense if you think about it, because there's a few details in one place that are not necessarily in the other. And by combining the two, we can get the full picture. The only problem with that is that you have to kind of jump around a little bit, and the logistics of keeping up with where you are can be kind of difficult. I've got a lot of charts that I hope will help us do that. We're going to talk about the tabernacle, and of course the tabernacle was God's dwelling place among them. Why is it important for us to study anything about the tabernacle? I mean, we don't have a tabernacle today, do we? That's a yes and no answer, isn't it? No, we don't have a tabernacle like that. But the depiction of the tabernacle and the worship associated with it, even the arrangement of the tabernacle, the holy place and the most holy place, is represented later on in the New Testament. And the book makes an excellent point I hadn't really thought about before. I guess it should have, in that, you know, let's just ask this question. When was God's plan to redeem and save man formulated? When was that? Did that come sometime later on after the fall of man in the garden? That was in the very beginning. It was the mind of God in the very beginning. And I think we make a mistake if we try to go back and say, well, the book of Hebrews makes some comparisons between the holy place and most holy place and the arrangement that we have today with respect to God and having access to God. We make a mistake if we try to say that was patterned after the tabernacle, because God's plan for saving man was in the mind of God in the very beginning. So we have to understand, since God revealed to us later on and brings out these similarities of the tabernacle then versus today, that God would have known that, wouldn't he? You know, God is laying out this tabernacle with full knowledge of one day, that this actually representing some things that we live by today. And we'll talk about that more, probably not today, but as we get into our study, I believe we'll talk about it once we get into the actual worship. Let's talk about the tabernacle itself. The word just meant tent. Tabernacle just meant a tent. And that's what this structure is kind of going to be. It's going to be a very special tent. It won't be one that's thrown up in an hour. It's going to be made of a very costly materials, expensive, but it would be portable like a tent. And as they would travel from place to place, they would take it down and travel with it, put it up again, and it would be repeatedly used that way. It would be an incredibly expensive structure. It would be covered with gold, silver, and bronze would be used in it. There would be very special woven coverings of expensive purple, blue cloth, scarlet cloth, fine linen, goat's hair, which was something that in that day it would have been something that I would imagine would have been luxurious. Ram skins, and then some versions say badger. I've read that the word really doesn't mean badger in the sense that we use it today, but it would have been some aquatic type of animal, like a seal or a porpoise, something like that. Those skins would have been used as well. There would have been very costly gemstones like onyx, oil and spices, things that would have been used for the ephod and the breastplate, a breast piece, things that would have been used for the lighting of incense and things like that. Let me ask this question. How would this group of slave people, and they're not slaves anymore, but not too long before this, they were, how would they have come to have all these things? Right, they actually took them from the Egyptians. The Bible actually uses the word spoil the Egyptians, in a sense, because how did that come about? Did they just, out of their own free will, just hand it to them? In a sense, that's true, but what made them do that? Okay, I heard three people and I didn't hear any of you. Sir, I'm sorry. They had the incentive. God actually caused the Israelites to be considered in a favorable sense. They would have looked on them favorably, and when they asked for these things, they apparently just handed them right over. So they had taken a lot of things out of Egypt, and they had gold and silver and costly stones and all these special cloths. They had a lot of that, and they may have had some of these things themselves, but primarily we're led to believe it's implied that they got those things from when they took them and were given them by the Egyptians. The tabernacle itself would have consisted of a tent-like structure with coverings, hooks, boards, rods or bars, pillars, sockets, and then the actual furniture itself, ark with poles, a mercy seat. That doesn't necessarily mean a seat in the sense of a place to sit, but a seat or something that seats down or covers. I grew up a long time thinking it was a seat-like thing. Tables, utensils, curtains, lamps, screens, an altar, basins, hangings, pegs, priestly garments. This was not done overnight. And even the logistics of putting it up, taking it down, would have been something that would have taken an organized effort to do, and we will see later on, not tonight necessarily, but God is going to assign certain families responsibilities associated with it. So, and we talked about, I guess I got a little ahead of myself, the concept and arrangement of the tabernacle foreshadows the New Testament scheme of redemption, doesn't it? So that's why it's important for us. Really, if you don't understand the Old Testament tabernacle, there are going to be places in the book of Hebrews that you're going to be lost in. Because the book of Hebrews uses these concepts from the tabernacle to illustrate New Testament principles today. And this was it was God's dwelling place among the people. That tabernacle would move from place to place. What other thing was associated with the tabernacle that would have... I can't hardly ask the question without giving it away. The cloud, you got what I'm talking about. The cloud of pillar of fire at night, pillar of cloud in the day would have descended upon the tabernacle. And when it moved, what did they know to do? When it lifted, it's time to go. Time to pack up and let's go. And God is going to use that as a means of communication of when to leave and when to stay. But they could look at that tabernacle and see that cloud, and see that pillar of cloud of the day. They could see that pillar of fire at night. And they could know, and when they looked at that, they knew that God dwelt among them. That was a reminder to them. God dwells among us. We're God's special people. And it should have been an everlasting, just a continual reminder. It should have been something that really should have kept them from straying into some of the things that they did, at least in my way of thinking. They should have been able to look at that and say, God's among us. Now, let's start with chapter 25, and you'll see there are several different areas that are covered here. Let's look at chapter 25 to begin with. And this is the Lord speaking to Moses. If you look over to chapter 31, and I may get a little messed up here and there, hopefully not. I thought one area was where Moses actually speaks to the people. Yeah, in chapter 35, Moses is actually going out to the congregation and doing it. So let's look at what he says. God says to the people, raise a contribution from me. And how is this to be done? What was to be the motivating factor here? In verse 2. A Okay, a free will offering. As every man whose heart moves him, you shall raise my contribution. And this is the contribution you're to take. And some of the things we just talked about, gold and silver and bronze and blue and purple and scarlet material, fine linen, goat hair, ram skins dyed red, porpoise skin, acacia wood, oil for lighting. God has given, and this is, of course, God instructing Moses here, and he's telling him to take up a contribution. Then he says, let them build a sanctuary for me that I may dwell among them. And then I'm going to show you how to have the pattern of the tabernacle. He's going to give him specific instructions for the design of this tabernacle, how it's to be built, what wood it's to be made of, how wide, how tall, how long it's supposed to be, how it's to be arranged. God is telling Moses these things. That's true. He does make that point. See, he did not. He says, you make this according to the pattern that I give you. The Hebrew writer actually borrows that phrase and brings that into the New Testament as well. So the people started bringing things. And was this something that was pretty hard to do as far as getting people to participate? No. You know, these people, I mean, as critical as we can be of them at times, and sometimes we don't understand why they did some of the things that they did, like the golden calf and the murmuring and complaining that they did. You got to give them credit here. This time they show a good attitude. And I can't remember if it's 35 or 31 where we actually read that they brought so much stuff that they had to be told to stop. They had to be told to stop. We don't need any more. Don't bring any more. And that ought to make us feel good about them. They wanted to participate in this effort. And they weren't really told that they had to, that from what I can see. So they bring these cloths and linens and skins and stones. Think about it. It would have been a pretty good effort just to send word out, okay, here's what we need. I would imagine, and again, I'm speculating, but I think it seems obvious that they're told, word goes out, here are the things that are needed for making God's tabernacle. And they would have identified the various materials. People would have brought those things. They would have gone through their possessions if they'd wanted to, and they would have gone through and picked out things that they wanted to contribute. And they would have brought this contribution. And again, word had to be told, sent out, okay, we've got enough. You know, we can't use it all, I believe is the way it words it. Thank you. Chapter 36. I think we'll spend a lot of time going between 26 and 36 or 25 and 36 tonight. Is that right? 25 and 36, I believe, I kept noticing as I was studying. Thank you, Doug. Third chapter 36, what verse? Yeah, Moses issues a command, a proclamation circulated throughout the camp. Let no man or woman perform any work anymore for the contributions. The people are bringing much more than enough for construction for which the Lord commanded us to perform. Now let's go back. The first part of that deals with a couple of men that are chosen. Chapter 25. I'm going to bounce around a lot. It's a little hard. It's kind of hard to teach this way. But I think it really is a good way to try to get all the details. Well, actually, I should have stayed in, 31 or 36. Let's go to 31. I knew I should have made some notes about where everything was. Chapter 31, the very beginning, it says, see, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur. He's from the tribe of Judah. And what had God done specifically with him? Yeah, he filled him with his spirit and wisdom and understanding and knowledge and in all kinds of craftsmanship. He picked out this individual. I don't know if he had this before and God added to it, or if God just picked him out and gave him this ability. Either way, God blesses him with an incredible ability to make artistic designs for work in gold and silver and bronze, cutting stones and putting them in settings. These would have been things that would have been needed to do this. All kinds of craftsmanship. And who is the other person he appoints? Aholab. And he's from what tribe? Tribe of Dan. So the people have kept up with what tribes they're in, right? And that's going to be pretty important. It's already important. Still, sure enough, going to be important as they eventually enter the land. That heritage, that genealogy has been maintained, and it will continue to be maintained. Scarlet. Okay. That's a good point. These are very, Brother Stevens is pointing out these things that were identified in chapter 25, gold, silver, bronze. The blue material, purple, and scarlet materials would have been very expensive things, as expensive as anything that would have been known. And the expense associated with making this is going to be really a great thing. That's a good point that Brother Munoz makes with respect to, this would not have been an easy thing, but they had a mindset, a willing mindset to do what it took to participate in this, and that's a good example for us today. There may be something that looks awfully hard, but yet if we'll have the proper mindset and the proper attitude of willingness to jump in and do it, we can do it. Certainly if God commands us or God expects us to do it, we should have that kind of attitude. So that's a very good point as well. I don't know what my point was. Anyway. Yeah, I had remembered. I didn't know if that was the same purple here as later on, but yeah, there is certainly a purple material associated with a certain sea creature that when it's killed, there's a little bit of an ink, like purple ink, that's obtained, and that would have been the way this material was made. If you think about the labor associated with doing that, would have made it very expensive. So those are good points. Let's talk about these individuals again. God has placed in, particularly this first one, it mentions that he has been placed a spirit of wisdom and understanding. Turn over to chapter 35, I believe. It mentions some more details about them. Verse 30, Moses says to the sons of Israel, "See, the Lord is called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, and so forth, and he has filled him with the Spirit of God and wisdom, as we've already mentioned, and to how to make designs, how to cut stones. He has also put in his heart to teach, both he and Aholiab of the tribe of Dan." So not only are they going to have these skills themselves, but they're also going to be able to communicate and teach others. Again, think about it. They would not have been able to do all this by themselves, I don't think. They would have had to employ the use of others in terms of how to make these things. And it goes over in verse 35, God has filled them with skill to do embroidery work. Many of the coverings that we'll talk about in a little bit would have had embroidery designs of cherubims, embroidery designs of particular threads and weaves inside some of the materials. We don't know exactly how all those looked, but I imagine it was something to see. And it would have been something beautiful to behold. And as we start chapter 36, these two individuals and every skillful person whom the Lord has put skill and understanding. Again, God had blessed others, it seems, as they start to do this work. Everyone whose heart stirred him, it also says, and the Lord whom the Lord had put skill. And they receive these contributions and they start performing the work. And then that's where we start seeing the idea of them, of the people bringing too much. Again, a good attitude on the part of the people. And I'm a little ahead of myself with my charts. And this was nice and big and easy to read at home, sitting 3 feet in front of the monitor. So the overall dimensions that God gives, it would have been the tabernacle itself, I'm outlining it right here. It would have been 45 feet long, 15 feet wide, and 15 feet tall. Excuse me, that's not right. Yeah, 15 feet tall, I'm sorry. I had it right to start with. It would have been composed of two rooms. One room was basically twice as big as the other. The small room here where the Ark of the Covenant was to be placed was basically a 15 by 15 by 15 cube. Okay? This room would have been a 30 by 15 room. This is where the holy place would be. This would have been the most holy place would be. There would be a veil between the two that I'm trying to outline there. I've got another picture or two that hopefully depicts it a little better. This would have been inside an overall courtyard that in feet, you think of in feet. I actually saw one depiction on the internet that actually had also had meters. If you can think better in meters, and some of you here might be able to, but I can't. But this would have been 150 feet, the courtyard, by 75 feet. Let's think for a second. Would the tabernacle itself fit inside here? I think it would have easily. Again, 45 by 15. I imagine this bench here is wider than 15 feet, isn't it? Probably 20. So if I take 5 feet off of here, something like that, start from here. Some of you are smiling as my internal tape measure not that good. 15 feet wide. I mean, this is as wide as this thing was. That was it. Now, mentally, when you think of the tabernacle, we usually think of it as this big room where the candlestick sitting over here and table of showbread's over here and there's a lot of distance between. There's really not that much different distance. It actually really wasn't that big of a structure. Keep going. And this is another chart that looked really nice and clearly defined on my monitor at home. When you get in a projector like this, you lose a little bit of clarity, and I should have checked this out initially. This is one person's depiction of what this would have looked like. We don't want to get too hung up on exactly how it looked. We know it was over. The boards were overlaid with what? With gold. Overlaid with gold. It was made of acacia wood. And it would have set, it would have been comprised of boards. And I've got a little depiction to show you north, south, east, and west. This would have been north over here. And of course, east over here. 20 boards on the north and south sides. 20 boards on the east. Excuse me. I think I should have said west. The boards themselves would have been 15 feet tall by approximately 27 inches wide. Remember, how long do we think a cubit normally is? 18 inches. It's hard to be completely dogmatic about that. There could have been some variation in what a cubit represented, but approximately, I think a cubit was this about this distance from here to here, wasn't it? So roughly 18 inches. It was a standard that they would have used, and we can convert that pretty close to feet. So this board would have been a fairly long, tall board. Is that about 27 inches? Pretty close. Think about that going up 15 feet. How about high is that right there? Sir? Yeah, it probably would, because that's about 8, right? 8, and there's another 8, so Brother Stevens, you got it about right, I would imagine. That would have been a pretty tall board. We're not told how thick they are. No, they didn't have planes to plane them down. They had God helping them as far as their ability to learn how to do these things. And this would have not have been impossible. People made structures back then, and they had ability to find materials. Brother Stevens. What do you think the purpose of that was? What did the board sit in? Did they just sit in the ground? Silver sockets. And we don't know exactly, I don't think we're told exactly how they were made. People kind of have ideas. It would have been a socket that the wood would have sat down in and gone down in. And silver is fairly malleable, so I would imagine you could have got a pretty tight fit. We're told that the silver sockets themselves weighed 75 pounds apiece. And we know from the number of boards, there were 48 total boards, and there were 2 sockets, one for each side of the board used. So that would have, 48 times 2, that's 96. But there were 4 other sockets used for the interior post on which the veil was hung. So there would have been a total of 100 silver sockets. So 100 times 75, that's 7,500 pounds just of silver sockets. And we're not even considering the fact these huge boards made of acacia wood overlaid with gold. I think that would have been pretty heavy. I don't think I would have tried to tackle one without even gold on it. We don't know how much gold it had, but gold is a heavy metal. And if it's plated on top of those woods, each one of those planks, you just think about the weight associated with this. Are you getting an idea of what this would have looked like? Again, I've got the dimensions shown here as well. And there's a man standing there. I would think he would actually look a little bigger than that, perspective-wise. Either that or he's really, really small. So somebody wasn't thinking when they drew that picture. I got that picture off the internet, and then I added the dimensions and some of these other notes. Now, the coverings themselves, the innermost, the one that would have been over the very inside, if you had gone inside and looked up, you would have seen this one. It would have been a fine linen, and fine linen would have been white. And God said that He wanted cherubim. What is a cherubim? I don't really know either. Most people think of it as an angel, but I don't think the Bible really tells you that it is. But it was some sort of being that would have had wings, of course. And they would have had embroidered. They would have used blue and purple and scarlet thread and threaded flight material. And they would have woven these designs into the linen itself. So when you looked up and saw that, you would have looked up and have seen those designs. Goat's hair. And I pulled another picture off the internet. They didn't consider the fact, like the book does, that goat's hair most likely would have been black. That usually it was a black type of a covering. This one shows it as white. Of course, here showing the first one with the embroidered threads inside it. A second covering goes over this one, and that is of goat's hair. Then the ram skin would have gone over it. And then outer would have been an aquatic type of animal. You think about that for a second. Does that kind of make sense? That you'd want to have an aquatic type of skin on top, one that would have been good at repelling water? Kind of makes good sense to me. but four different coverings that are made. Now, if you'll go to the internet and look at a lot of drawings, you'll see pictures of the tabernacle and the coverings over it. And some people feel like there was probably some ridge poles at the very top or inside that would have caused the coverings to have a peak to them. Well, why would you want that? Yeah, water, to let water drain off. The Bible doesn't specifically mention it. Now, whether or not they had that and whether or not God conveyed them to them that that was an acceptable thing to do, I don't know. But a lot of drawings will assume that. I don't like to assume things. I just like to take it for what it is and let the water drain and let that be for somebody else's worry. Now, there was a veil that's already been mentioned. It separated the holy place and the most holy place. And it would have also been made of fine linen. They used a lot of fine linen in making this. And again, it would have been very similar to the inside covering. It would have made of fine linen. Cherubim, would have been woven inside with blue, purple, and scarlet threads. It would have been suspended from hooks of gold upon the four poles that we've talked about. I think we talked about there were four poles that separated those two rooms. There aren't any really height dimensions, but we know from later on that when the priest went in and unhooked and would have gone in and covered the Ark of the Covenant with it, they would have reached up and done it. So my thinking is it probably wasn't 15 feet high. It probably was considerably less than that. If they didn't have any other means of unhooking it, they reached up and unhooked it. But we don't know for sure. We don't know for sure. This is moving a lot faster than I anticipated. And let me say again, we're not going into it. I mean, we said this numerous times, but for the benefit of our visitors, this is not a detailed study. This is an overview. And we're hitting high points, and we're doing the same thing with the tabernacle. Trying to learn the basic idea of what the tabernacle looks like. There was an entrance curtain made of fine linen. It was intermingled with blue and purple and scarlet. It would have been suspended from hooks of gold upon five poles, and it sat in sockets made of bronze. That would have been the entrance curtain to the tabernacle itself. So now we see bronze being used. The courtyard itself, and we already showed this, but now I've got some verbiage that kind of talks about it. 150 feet long this way, 75 this way, and it would have been 7.5 feet tall. Now, how high was the tabernacle? 15 feet. So if you're standing outside, unless you're right up against the 7.5-foot wall, if you're back here at all, what are you going to see? Yeah, you can see the top of the tabernacle. And it would have been covered in gold. Can you imagine what that would have... Well, I don't know if you would have seen the coverings on it, but just to get a look at the tabernacle itself covered with gold, what would that have looked like? It would be completely covered, but if you could see it, it would have been a beautiful sight, exactly. And there would have been some who could have seen it while it was being put up. Okay. The walls of the courtyard itself were made of finely woven white linen, and they were suspended from silver rods and silver hooks on posts set in bronze sockets. Again, bronze sockets. Again, and there are a good many of these. There were 20 posts and 20 sockets set on the north and the south, and of course 10 on the east and west. And they were held by bronze pegs and ropes. So we can get the idea that this wall was somehow held up by ropes that would have been drawn to the ground, like a tent that you would see, like a tent peg. The courtyard entrance was on the east side, and with a curtain, I got a typo there, made like the tabernacle curtain, very similar in terms of its arrangement. Now, there is actually someone who has built, somewhere in Israel, they've actually built a replica of what they think the tabernacle would look like. It's virtually impossible to know for sure, to get every detail, because the Bible doesn't give every detail. Okay? But this would have been a general idea of what, again, what one person or some people might have thought it looked like. Think about being out in the wilderness, and this is not like these rolling hills we have here on the foot, very part of the foothills of the Appalachians. Much different terrain here than there. This would have been a very mountainous terrain, right? As they move, and you would have mountains all around you. Here's another depiction. This is an actual model that was built. And you can see the idea of the poles and the white linen used for the surrounding of the tabernacle. Of course, there's the entrance. And you see these poles are held up by ropes. You also see the same idea used with the curtains themselves. And I did not prepare to talk too much about the furniture today. I didn't know how far we would get. How much time do we have? We don't have a whole lot of time, do we? Right. Right. They would have known, they would have had an idea as to what it looked like. You know, about what, however that happened, God would have given them the ability to know what a cherubim was like. And most of us associate with an angel-like creature. I don't know if they are the same. I don't think they are the same. Somehow we studied this a long time ago when Bob was here and that point was made. I can't remember specifically, but anyway, it would have been some sort of angelic or some sort of being that had wings. And that would have been on top of that Ark of the Covenant we'll talk about next time. Do you get a sense for what this looked like? Do you think this seemed like a pretty special place? Is that an understatement? Not another one like it. And just the expense and the trouble they went to and the arrangement. I forgot to mention something about the tabernacle itself. On each corner, the Bible doesn't give us specific detail, but there would have been some way in which these boards would have been doubled up on the corners. We don't know exactly how that worked. And something else I forgot to mention, and I apologize for forgetting this, how were these boards held together? Yeah, there would have been rings and poles that would have been slidden through, I believe, throughout the length. And that would have held these walls together. Okay? And they would have been on each side, and there would probably have been some overlapping of them, as our book says. But they would have had to have been stitched together somehow, kept together somehow, right? Otherwise, you got boards going everywhere, and there would have been no stability to this structure. But they would have been doubled up some way on the corners. And there's language that indicates that. But exactly how it was, we're not told, and we don't need to speculate too much. We don't need to worry too much about it. But get the idea of holy place and the most holy place, because it is an important concept. And realize this is different than a chronological study, and it's been a little more detail oriented tonight. And I hope that I hope you benefited from it. I mean, this is something God told them to do. God expected them to do it. And He expected them to do it exactly the way that He said. And is God any different today? No. God gives us a pattern today, we ought to follow it. That's right. That's right. And we'll talk about that as we get a little further on, and there will be specific families given the responsibility of carrying this furniture. The Ark of the Covenant, all those articles had rings and poles that went through it. They weren't even to touch them. And they were transported with poles. And we'll see that as we go further on. Those are good points. Thank you for your attention. Again, I apologize if it's a lot of details and not as much actual chronological study, but this is part of our study, and it's important. Thank you.